Podcast, and I am Steve Miggs, and I am here with the Reverend Fuego.
Hello.
Just the two of us.
You and I.
You try.
Oh, yeah.
Just the two.
I don't remember, like, yeah, that's the lyrics.
That's all I know. I don't even remember. Who was that?
I know Will Smith did it, didn't he?
You know what? I think you might be
with
right.
With his kid, Jaden, before he got weird.
That was something that happened, came out before them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just don't know the other one.
Grover Washington.
What?
What?
Grover Washington?
That's what it said. Here, let's see what this one sounds like.
Oh, no.
This is, in other words, Glenn is not here today. He's Big Raj is leaving town today, so he wanted to hang out with him right before he left. So I was like, yeah, I guess that makes sense. It is your father.
Gosh, right?
That was fun last week having
Big Raj. Dude, that was amazing.
And yeah, they were both awesome. Yoda as well.
I want to call her Yoda. So, yeah, I mean, I remember the Will Smith. This is where he starts rapping. Oh, yeah. And the
beauty of it all. Beauty of it all.
Grover Washington.
Sounds a little more Kermit to me.
Falls in my mind when I think of you sometime. I want to spend more time with you.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us. Rev and Steve.
Just the two of us. Oh, what am I doing here?
Just all right. The two of us.
Nice. And then here's a...
Now, Dad, this is a very sensitive subject.
Oh, gosh. You're right.
Yeah, man.
Now, Dad, this is a very sensitive subject. Is Mom not around?
It's like talking when he grows. Yeah, I think so. Might be for, like, the Happiness movie.
Oh. It's on Big Willie style.
Yeah, it is.
That record.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's just that. Breaking it down.
Just people are like, so this is what happens when Glenn doesn't come on the podcast?
Yeah, sorry guys.
Yep, we listen to Will Smith songs.
From the first time the doctor placed you in my arms, I knew I'd meet death before I let you meet harm. Although questions arose in my mind, would I be man enough against...
How dare he write a song about being a good dad?
That first night took an hour just to get the car seat in right. People driving off fast got me kind of upset. Got you home safe, placed you in your bassinet. That night, I don't
right,
think.
Yeah, okay,
yeah, I mean, yeah,
that was good. Good for him.
Good talk, good talk.
But we will be joined in a little bit by JT Phillips. Some exciting stuff. The Bruiser Brody records have finally showed up in the mail.
Oh,
so he's coming on by to give me a couple copies.
Almost swore.
I know, I'm pretty pumped, dude. It just felt like this took forever, even though it didn't. Like, it felt like it took forever.
I guess, yeah, like what's a normal, like, I don't know anything about the recording process or anything. Is this like normal time sort of stuff?
Well, I mean, you know, if... In a weird way, it kind of works out to be somewhat normal. It takes a while to record stuff. It takes a while to then get it mastered and mixed. But we worked on such a weird kamikaze schedule that, you know, most of the record was the full record was recorded in four total days.
Wow.
You know, we did 2 days where we put out that EP, but then we took those songs, combined them with five new songs that we recorded, also done in 2 days, and have now mashed it into a 10-song full-length record. So if you have the EP, you've already heard half of the record, but we have had them remixed and remastered so that everything sounds smooth, everything fits and works well together. I've already heard a test copy of it, and I had goosebumps listening to it. It was like one of those moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like listening to it on a Dropbox file or putting it on like some kind of email. You lose a lot of the fidelity of it all, but when you can put a CD in the car, turn it up, and everything feels right, and then you realize, wow, this is my band. It's pretty awesome.
That is really cool.
So if you were a pledger and you're wondering, when am I going to be getting this? In the next few weeks, you'll be getting it because we're still waiting for some T-shirts to be printed. We got a couple little surprises to throw into some of the high bidders or high pledgers.
I think I pledged. I'm pretty sure I did. I mean, I know I just pledged for Glenn's.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure I pledged for yours as well. Kickstarter, I don't remember.
Well, I know who will know is JT Phillips, because he's been in charge of handling all the Kickstarter stuff. So,
oh, there you go.
So he's coming by so I could sign a bunch of the stuff, and he'll hang out with us on the podcast and talk a little bit about the record.
Oh, you got to sign stuff.
Yeah, because some of the people paid a good chunk of change for our autographs, which is beyond humbling. So,
dude, they paid a lot more for some extra things, too.
That is very true. That is very true. Yeah, we will be doing some home. I think one of them is going to be done at the Liquid Lime, because it's like somebody that works there that wanted us to play.
Cool.
And then the other one's going to probably be done at somebody's home, which will be a lot. I'm actually looking forward to that. The idea of doing a house party With Bruiser Brody sounds like a phenomenal time. So
yeah.
You mentioned Glenn's Kickstarter. Let's throw it out there. Since Glenn's not here, we don't want you to go buy it. No, I'm kidding. really want to see this Kickstarter get funded. And he is, I believe, $720 as of press time away from fulfilling his Kickstarter goal, which I believe he has 15 more days. So if you're thinking about buying his record in advance, helping him fund the recording, the mixing, the mastering, the pressing, he just needs a few more dollars. I mean,
super close.
It's very close. So just, you know, look it up on Google. You can just type in Glenn Cannon Kickstarter, and I'm sure you'll be able to find that Kickstarter that way. But yeah, dude, very exciting times for the Bruiser Brody folks, because we're going to have our record out. We're going to get it out to the pledgers in the very near future, and then we're going to officially have it out on Thanksgiving.
Oh,
so it'll be on like
very good Thanksgiving,
yes,
indeed.
More like a Black Friday kind of a thing.
Nice. But,
you
know,
you could purchase it on iTunes and all that. So December,
yeah, go run over your neighbors and go pick it up.
Exactly.
Wait, online. So wait, that doesn't work.
Yeah, do it anyway. Buy the record, listen to it, and then run over your neighbors. What is that? What is Thanksgiving, like the 23rd,
okay, or 4th or something like that? Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's weird because I always imagine it being, yeah, it's the 22nd.
So our record will be out on the 22nd and more so the 23rd.
I've always like been so used to Thanksgiving being that last week. Mm-hmm. It kind of threw me for a loop.
Agreed.
And it's actually, I kind of like it now because since we've changed the way that we get paid here, yep, we get 3 paydays that month.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, because we get it on the 2nd, then yeah, moving on down.
Oh, you're right. Every other Friday.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool. Just in time for the holidays.
Right. I mean, it actually means nothing. We get paid the exact same amount as we used to, but it just seems nicer.
Well, and then just keep this date in, since I'm throwing out a bunch of dates to confuse people. January 19th. Mark that date in your calendar. That will be the Bruiser Brody celebration of our record. So luckily you'll have an opportunity to have the record for a few months before you get to
memorize those songs.
Yeah, get to know them. But January 19th, we are going to be playing at the Crocodile, and I believe, ooh, I just locked in a certain band. The timing just worked out perfectly of a band that I genuinely love that's also going to be playing with us.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Not 100% yet, but...
don't jinx it then.
Right, but it's looking pretty cool. That'll be an absolute honor. And it'll also time out well for their CD release, because they're going to be doing a CD release show as well.
Killer.
So it'll be a pretty killer lineup. So just keep that date free. I know we'll have details at some point in the near future. I don't even know if you can purchase tickets yet. I'm not good at that crap. But I'm good at letting people know things in advance, because apparently we already spoiled Live Day, or quote unquote. We gave the information about Live Day last week. I forgot we even did.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Cannon said something about that. And I figured it was just like, I mean, because we get emails and stuff.
I forget things haven't been announced yet.
I figure things are, yeah. I'm just like, all right, yeah, it's happened, so we don't need to worry about it. Well, I mean, if you go back and you can find,
yeah, if you know about it. Don't let others know about it. Let's keep it a Migscast secret, because I don't want to get in trouble for that. And I thought about it because I had a couple people say, hey, you realize you just told us all about Live Day? I'm like, no, we didn't. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, oh, crap, we did. And I was like, I should go back, find that piece on the podcast and edit it and then re-upload the podcast. And I started to do that and I got lazy and I said, screw it. I'd rather get in trouble than have to go through this effort of re-editing
it. It's an Easter egg, everybody.
It is. Before we talk to JT, whenever he does show up, how was your weekend? I know I haven't seen you. We had a long weekend. We had a 3-day weekend.
Yeah, it was busy. It was busy in kind of like the silly ways that stuff is are busy. Mm-hmm. Like Saturday, God, what did I do? Okay,
did
I went
you pumpkin carving with Danny V.
We did pumpkin carving. I was trying to think if we did anything before that, but I might have just not worn pants up until that point. But yeah, pumpkin carving with Danny was a lot of fun. It's now a yearly tradition. This is the second annual.
Now you can say it's annual.
Yeah, yep.
I always love when people say it's the first annual.
I'm like, well.
Not really.
Yeah.
Prove it.
I really like it because I love carving pumpkins. We're going to be doing it next weekend with my nieces.
Nice.
So it'll be fun with that. And so, yeah, we went up to West Seattle, got Chris's wife, because Chris was on the men's weekend with BJ.
Oh, he was gone. Oh, that's why we had the 3-day weekend.
Yeah.
Somebody was asking me, I forgot why. I was like, it has something to do with BJ. And their response was, we figured as much. It's never because of you.
Like, right?
Yeah.
No, yeah. So he was out there, and apparently Chris got sick by hanging out with all those men. So that's...
Oh, that's right, because Chris was out sick today.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder what they were doing.
I don't know, man. They're all cooped up in the same place. If it's just one dude who's sick,
yeah, right,
he's just going to get everybody sick. So I was actually kind of surprised BJ wasn't.
I'm surprised he hasn't convinced himself that he is sick. BJ's very good at that.
He's like, really good at that.
Like convincing himself he's hopped up on an energy drink before it really even settled into
his
system.
He was like, I'm seeing sparkles. I'm like, this. You have had like literally three sips.
Yes.
You're insane. This is not a thing.
And if you hadn't heard it, go back and podcast our 6 a.m. hour on Friday of last week for BJ and Migs. We did Bang Friday where we all crushed Rev literally crushed an entire can of Bang Energy in one break.
It was the first break. It was good. It was tasty. That's my problem.
Yeah.
If it tastes really good, I'm just going to destroy it.
So now I'm already, I might get into BJ's head. If he's going to be like, I'm not feeling well. You know what I mean?
Do we want more days off?
Maybe we'll get a Friday off.
So Chris was indisposed, but his wife wanted to really go. So since she's down in Tacoma, we all carpooled up and I drove up there because I'm driving pretty, not drinking. So it's really easy for me to be the DD.
Yeah.
It's just super simple at that point. And then everyone gets to have a really fun time, especially my wife who got really super hammered and then had a hangover for the next day.
Oh, fun.
Well, what didn't bother me that much, I had other stuff to do, so I was going to hang out with some friends.
Do you like to torture her when you know she has a hangover? Like, maybe forget to turn off the alarm clock?
No, because we have cats, and cats don't care about that.
Yeah.
So they woke us up super early. I had to feed them and then just kind of close the door and let her not worry about that. But pumpkin carving was a blast. It's always fun because it's mostly like people from the station, a couple of Danny's friends, but a lot of us, and then like Robin and Alyssa.
Yeah, I saw the picture. Yeah, Robin from the men's room and Alyssa from the end.
Yeah, yeah. So they were down there hanging out too and carving pumpkins, and people are so good. Like, people are really good at carving pumpkins.
Right.
And I had a plan, and then my plan went to hell really quick.
Because you forgot the ingredients to your plan.
Yeah, and I wanted to make an Infinity Gauntlet pumpkin, which apparently now I'm going to have to do later on. And so, Friday, that's exactly what we did on Friday. We didn't really go do anything, and Michelle wanted to go to a pumpkin patch, and I don't want to go to pumpkin patches. I don't really like pumpkin patches.
What?
Here's the deal with a pumpkin patch.
You just go to the store and get your pumpkins?
Yes. Safeway has perfectly acceptable pumpkins.
But the fun part is feeling like you picked it out.
But it's not. It's big lie. They have a field that is barren, has nothing on it, and they just put pumpkins there.
Right.
It's like a crappy Easter egg hunt.
They've moved all the pumpkins from the actual pumpkin patch part to a weird, dirty part.
Even if there were some sort of pumpkin that was like, I don't know, like there, or like the vines were there and still like chopped. So it's like, okay, maybe I don't want to chop all of these things, but maybe I want to pretend.
Yes.
Like there's no semblance of that. So it just turned out to be kind of horse crap. So we just go to Safeway, get them there. And then we ended up going to a whole bunch of different vintage shops and Goodwill. Went to Goodwill, Michelle spent a lot of money on just random stuff.
For the pumpkins?
No, just for like Thanksgiving, like dishes, like large things.
To get in the season.
Yeah, there were some Halloween things. We got a whole bunch of like spider webs, and we got like a Halloween wreath and all this really fun stuff. And then I found like actual colored gems that I wanted to put into my pumpkin so it would look like, the light would go through, it would look like the Infinity Stones.
Right.
And then I forgot those. So I just made a stupid face. And I was pissed off about it. And I was trying not to be an ass, like, at the party. But I was kind of pouting a little bit. And then I got over it, and people partied, and we had fun.
Should have smashed everyone's pumpkins at some point. Yo, my pumpkin's ruined. F you guys.
Oh, that would have been the truth. Never do that.
That would be in the spirit of Thanos.
It would be. I was smashing half of them.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, JT Phillips just walked into the room.
Hi, JT.
What's up, JT?
What's happening, gentlemen? Right,
big question for you since you're here, and this is the only question we need to ask you, is do you get your pumpkin from a pumpkin patch, or do you go to the store to buy a pumpkin?
I would love to say that I go to a pumpkin patch and look around and find the right one, but no, I get the smallest one possible at the store.
Oh, the little sugar pumpkins.
Yeah. And just like, it's easy carving. That's it. Lasts for like 3 days, withers, dies, move on.
There you go.
Fair enough. Well, we mentioned it before, now that you're here, it's pretty exciting times. I mentioned how the Bruiser Brody record is finally in the mail and showed up.
Yep. It's sitting in boxes at my house at the moment.
Yes.
We'll be getting it out to all the Kickstarter pledges here shortly, as soon as the rest of the t-shirts arrive. And and then we'll unleash it on the world.
That's Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving or November 23rd, whatever date that works out to be.
That's pretty awesome. And that'll be when it's available like on iTunes and people could stream it, get it.
Stream it if you weren't part of the
to buy it, you could stream it.
Yeah. And if you weren't part of the Kickstarter pre-order, you'll be able to purchase the album from our website bruiserbrodyband.com on that date
Three
as well.
Three B's.
Perfect. How are things going with you, man? I haven't seen you in a minute.
Things are great.
Yeah.
Come on, just trying to stay warm and, you know, peer through this fog up here. It's amazing.
Dude,
you guys can see anything.
It's so thick. It was really cool.
Fogtober.
Last week it was neat because it was like one of the first days that the fog came in, and it was literally slow rolling from the south, and I could watch it coming up.
Dude,
from
that
the
was
windows.
Weird.
It was super creepy.
It looked like Armageddon or
yeah,
something about to happen.
Yeah, it was really cool. Or like the mist.
It was Thanos coming in.
Yes!
Taking over, going to destroy.
My boy.
It's wiping out half of us.
Yeah.
Which half would it be?
Just hope you're the good half there, Steve.
Right. I don't feel so good, doctor.
Nice.
That's about all I remember. It's very rare that I remember anything from a movie.
I know, right?
I figured while you were here, we'd do some voicemails, some emails, some text messages, because I actually did save a couple things that were band-related. And I was like, you know what? Glenn's going to, I saved a bunch that are specifically for Glenn. I was like, we'll save those for a future time. But you know what? Glenn's going to have to miss out on the band questions.
Ooh.
Because it'll be a good time. So why don't we jump into some stuff?
It's one of these males. Shall we next?
No, Glenn.
And GKT. All right, so you can leave us a voicemail at themixcast@gmail.com or call us or voicemail or text line 253-271-4787. This is a good one. I'm happy you're here. This is actually via email from Marcus. He says, guys, what is the oddest thing that you have seen on stage while playing?
Oh, wow.
I can think of one right off. Maybe it's something else will trigger as we keep talking about it.
Uh-huh.
The first thing I think about, we played at Fremont's Oktoberfest when I played with Peter Parker. And let's just say Peter Parker didn't have a very strong draw at this Oktoberfest. So there was maybe five people, including the sound guy, who was actually Doc that plays with the New Originals.
Really?
Yeah. So he was doing the sound. And even him and I have laughed about those Fremont Oktoberfest performances because it's like, at least we get beer for free.
You're just there.
But we were playing, and there was some lady that was, I don't know what she was on. She wasn't just stoned, I'll tell you that much. And she had an acoustic guitar, and she just decided, not coming up on stage, but for our set, she just played along with us. And I'm not sure she was playing anything that went along with what we were doing. But every time we'd finish playing, or there'd be like a slow, quiet breakdown of a song, you just hear the strumming of an acoustic guitar. And it was like the other four or five people that were watching us were just kind of looking at her like, we kind of want to see this band.
Yeah.
So she's driving off what little people we have.
Oh, no.
But I'm finding great humor in it because I'm drunk.
Because whatever.
So I think
it's Oktoberfest.
It's Oktoberfest. Yes. So I'd say that was probably one of the...
It was a battle of the bands right there.
Yeah. She was cute, but she was definitely on something. Like it was, or she was just perpetually fried.
Yeah, I eyes were open, but the light switch was off.
100%. Yeah, I don't even think she knew there was a band playing. To be honest,
everyone was there for her. This is her set.
This is going to work out.
Like, look at those guys holding instruments while watching
me
play.
Gosh.
So that might have been like the oddest thing that I remember witnessing while on stage. Now, JT, you've played quite a few shows probably this month.
I make noise. I do what I can.
And for those who don't know, JT also plays with Clover Jane, also with Outshined.
Outshined and Jarflies. The two tributes. Bruiser Brody, obviously.
Yep.
Jamie Nova Sky.
Yep.
Yeah, we just played last weekend. No, like with the tribute bands, everyone has like their one song that they want to hear. And where we were playing, I think, Tulalip with Outshine, the Soundgarden tribute band. And there was this guy who was insistent, like at every break, he was like, Room 1,000 Years Wide! And through every song, he is just yelling, Room 1,000 Years Wide! Which is a great Soundgarden song, but it just wasn't one we were doing. And every chance, it was like finally, it was so loud. Like, he's yelling it. It was like, we're not going to do that one today. He's like, Room 1,000 Years Wide!
Oh, my God.
I don't think he said anything else.
It's a good song.
There it is. Oh, yeah.
I should.
Why didn't you guys play it?
Well, I should have brought it up on an iPad. The guy was so drunk, he wouldn't have even noticed. You're like, yeah, here's your song. Just do the intro of it. Glenn and I have played this at acoustic a couple times.
Uh-huh.
Just at the acoustic gigs that we do. And it's one of my favorites. We just didn't have it, like, we didn't have it ready as the tribute band. We weren't going to do a song we couldn't do. Right.
Good
and those guys are rubbing their ears wide.
Oh. And then, in those moments where you just, like, look at the security guy, like, help me. Talk to him.
And the security guard's not even looking at you.
Like, I see that at comedy shows a lot where there's like a heckler.
Oh.
And you can just see the comic is looking around like, where the hell is the security guy?
We just...
what is that hand signal from on stage? Yeah. Like, this guy needs to... Without it being so obvious.
Right, like when a wrestler is really hurt, they give the X.
Yeah.
Or the ref does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to let the people in the back know, get the real EMTs, not the actors.
Gosh.
You got to do that music too, like the X.
Yeah, right? I remember going to a comedy show with... Jamie Kennedy.
Yes.
And it's that Seattle problem where people get hammered too much and think it's a conversation.
Yep.
And so back and forth. And finally,
it's a monologue, not a dialogue, drunkards.
And then Jamie was just like, can anybody actually do anything to maybe, and nobody showed up. And this is a comedy club that has like for the first 15 minutes before like the comedian goes on, they're running slides that say, you'll get kicked out, you'll shut up, you know, don't say anything. And he's just like, all right, well, I guess this isn't going to work.
Yeah, security guy was on that union-authorized smoke break.
Yes. Or maybe the security guy's like, you know what, I kind of want to hear Room 1,000 Miles About Two. Has playing the Soundgarden outshined? Because it's Soundgarden and Temple of the Dog that you guys will do, right?
And some Audio Slave and some Chris Cornell. We try and cover, you know, obviously, since the sad day of his passing, we've really worked at making it a Chris Cornell tribute.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did an acoustic show a couple weekends ago that focused on, the Temple of the Dog and his solo stuff.
Cool.
The Soundgarden, crank it up and add all the distortion.
Yeah.
You know, we try and cover all the bases because it's all good. So I can't go wrong.
Yeah. Has it been, have you felt like a more powerful vibe to it since his passing? I mean, because I would imagine there are people now that are coming because they know they're never going to get to see him perform these songs. So, you know, there's like a, I don't know if there's like a more of an emotional connection, whether it be with the band or with the fans, to his music when you're performing.
Oh, definitely. Obviously, it was a situation as a tribute band you would never want to be in.
Yeah.
You know, we started the tribute band in 2008 before Soundgarden reunited.
Right.
So we've been doing this for so long.
And then those bastards started to get back together.
And it was great. I mean, I wanted him to sing me into my gray years, you know.
Yeah.
That was something I never, you know, would have, and never in my wildest dreams had thought that was the story we would be living. But yes, definitely people, you know, come out and are more emotionally vested in it because that is now their connection to it.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that even when we play songs on the radio or, you know, even just driving by now EMP and seeing that statue and it's just like, my God, or like when you get those dumb Facebook reminders and it's like, I'm at a show that Cornell is performing at, you know, or a picture or, you know, the every once in a while I still get comments on that YouTube interview that I posted of before his solo show at the Benaroya Hall.
Oh, that was such a great show.
That was one of my favorites. And right before that, I got to go into the back and chat with him, and you know, spent a good chunk of it. He was very interested in my tattoos, so we talked about the reality tattoo shows that he was into, which I think a lot of Soundgarden or Chris Cornell fans got a kick out of because it's like a humanizing moment.
Oh, you're totally.
Like, wait, Chris Cornell likes reality shows? What the hell's going on? Yeah, he's actually, you know,
he's
just
a human guy.
He's just as human as the rest of us. He probably has a lot of things that he likes that are rather stupid, like the rest of us. Like, we all like stupid things. But, you know, I sometimes will still get comments on that and I'll just go back and see that. I'm like, you know, it's a bummer because you're just like, man, this guy was such an awesome individual and an incredible artist. I found for me, I don't know about for you, with his passing, the music of Audioslave, for some reason, has resonated more than any of his other stuff. What about for you? Do you feel like there was anything that like maybe like you weren't really maybe as obsessive about, but then when his passing, you started paying more attention to?
Oh, I mean, definitely. I've gone through, I think, you know, phases of it. There was a phase of just listening to Audioslave on repeat. Mm-hmm. There was the, you know, listening to the early couple Soundgarden ones on repeat. You know, the Ultra Mega OK, you know, just there's some wonderful, obviously wonderful things in that because it was under the radar at the time. That wasn't their breakout one that you kind of, you know, miss it. But mm-hmm. I mean, I remember the just some of those songs over there, like Beyond the Wheel, that I remember seeing them do that live once and like blown away. Go back and listen to that again and on record. It's powerful, that live performance was. So I've gone through phases for sure. And I definitely, you know, the Audioslave ones may not have given them as much of a play originally when
yeah,
they came out.
Same here.
Yeah. Obviously, two of the most iconic bands, Soundgarden and Rage Against the Machine, coming together. You just, you know, expecting something. And then it was great, but I don't think it was what people were expecting. So mm-hmm. yeah, like a lot of people, just, I'm going to put that aside. But when you take that all away and realize, hey, let's just listen to this as the record that it is, or the three records that they are, that it holds its own, you know, incredibly well. And it's just, I think, you know, if you take what you were expecting and just kind of put that aside and just walk into it like, hey, this is an amazing performance from four amazing people.
Yeah.
You're going to come out with like, that's a really good record.
It's funny because I think the first record I definitely obsessed over, you mm-hmm. know, because it was the first time where you're like, what is happening? Chris Cornell with the guys from Rage Against the Machine. And it was everything I hoped for. I really didn't, you know. But then the second record, which I thought was really good, and the third record was really good, I didn't find myself going as crazy about. Maybe it was just like, okay, I've heard this now. You know, and I was like, whatever. And I wasn't really as invested in it. But then, of course, when he passed, my wife had to finally put a stop to it. Like, she's just like, because we were on vacation. I think we were in Hawaii soon after that or somewhere.
All the time.
And when we're, you know, when she's reading a book on the beach, I have my headphones on and I'm like looking all bummed. No, we're in Vegas, I believe.
Oh.
And she's like, yeah, can you not listen to...
Can you stop being a downer, bro?
Right!
Like, all right. Come on, put on Girls Just Want to Have Fun and yeah, let's go do this.
Right, put on some Poison. Anything but Chris Cornell. Do something. Now, I was going to ask you, as far as... you also do the Jarfly stuff.
Yep.
Did you get to check out the pop-up shop museum?
Yes. With Alice in Chains in town, and I went to the Monday night baseball game where they showed up. I was hanging out with Mike Savoia on that one, and a whole host of people.
That was crazy because then the whole band just shows up.
Yeah,
surprise!
They came out and, you know, did a couple fun little things. It, you know, signed some autographs, came out into the crowd. The mm-hmm. Alice in Chains one, and listening to the, you know, the new record there. You know, it's like the first chance you got to listen to it. Everyone's in, like, you're at the baseball game, and people are grabbing hot dogs and waiting in line for beer. And I just want to stand next to the speaker and listen.
Right.
To this. This is the chance that I've gotten to. It's like, I'll talk to you in a little bit. They're only on track 7.
I forgot all about that. That was kind of the record release or CD listening party. Those guys have put out some of the most unique. Like, they, when I interviewed them around that time when the record came out, they shared the story of how they did one of their, I think it was for Facelift, they did the release, the listening party at the aquarium. And apparently,
really?
Once they got there, they realized rather quickly there's a decibel level that you can only reach before the people at the aquarium are like, hey, you need to, and it's not very loud.
Yeah.
So they had to listen to it at a moderately quiet level. And then the next time they did the planetarium, and then they did the planetarium again with Black Gives Way to Blue, but mm-hmm. they had phasing issues with the speaker. So the whole time while they're playing, I remember being there and I couldn't tell because, you know, I mean, I never heard the record before. I mean, and then also you're in a weird room, so you just kind of chalk it up to that. But apparently, like, Sean was losing his mind. Like, this is not what our record sounds like.
It's like,
what the hell is going on?
Restart. Let's figure this out.
Do over.
Let's figure it out. But yeah, no, that whole week, that pop-up display of just, you know, all of the pictures and cool little artifacts, you know, it's awesome that bands have saved some of that.
Yes.
You know, and whoever in management or in their garage or wherever all of that stuff came from, mm-hmm. You know, it was a wonderful look back at the history side of things and the build up, the handwritten notes from Facelift and from Dirt, and
yep.
like the big chart of what they were trying to, the self-titled album,
yes.
the Tripod album, with all the different names. Like, clearly, half of those, or more than half, were just meant to be jokes, but you get to see the humor in what those guys were. I mean, yep. they were, you know, four guys sitting in the studio having a blast,
yep.
you know, just trying to capture that, you know, the humor and their side of things and let that portray in you know, you into just... their music, as dark as their music really is.
Yes.
They all had a great sense of humor with it and kind of just with the band. And you see that in some of the pictures. There was one the picture that sticks out was when they were on tour with Eddie Van Halen, like right after Dirt. So they're, you know, Van Halen's the headliner and they're yep. one of the openers. And it's a picture of all of them in like G-strings walking out on stage.
Oh, yep. Jesus.
And they're just, they're crossing Great. The stage in front of everyone. And like Eddie's in the middle of playing and the look on his face is just like, keep it together. And he's just laughing and just like, he's on stage, he's playing. And these guys, all four of them just strutting across, you know, it's just, it was like, you see moments like that. Like where else would I have seen that photo except at a pop-up thing like this?
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, yeah, maybe it came across on Facebook, but you seeing it in the context of, you know, everything.
Hey,
they're
funny.
On tour. There were a couple
wow.
badges and that.
Are you
wow.
seeing it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one.
Yeah. Wow.
Isn't that fantastic?
That is amazing.
Google it, people. Dude, it's funny. It's funny you say, hey, I agree with you. What I love about Alice in Chains is they have a great sense of humor. And that pop-up thing, and also when you get to do interviews with them, you get to really realize that they're a fun-loving guys, which is a drastic opposite of what they are musically, because it's such a dark-sounding band that I think when I first met them, I thought they were going to be these dark, brooding guys, and they're actually just very cheerful. I mean, even they shared the story of when they were going to do the throw out the first pitch of that baseball game. It got screwed up because they put Jerry on the back of his jersey, and he was hoping they were going to put Cantrell on the back because they were going to line up so that their names would spell, each letter would spell, it would spell Dick. And I'm like, here's like this sad, somber band. And it was going to be, so it would have been Duval, Inez, Cantrell, Kenny. And like that was like a legit thing that they talked about and planned out. These are guys in their 50s.
And so they got Duval, Inez, Jerry.
Right.
It doesn't even make sense.
He's like, why'd you put Jerry? And then they kept going, Jerry. Like
yeah.
That. Yeah. But the what was I going to say about the pop-up shot? I forgot. Oh, that picture that you brought up, it yeah. instantly got me mad at my parents again because they did not let me go. I was going to go with my friend Thomas Condon. He was my concert going buddy in high school. We went and saw Motley Crue together. First ever concert. Motley Crue
nice.
And Skid Row. Unbelievable show.
Yeah,
right?
Your parents said okay to Motley Crue and no to Van Halen?
Second show they let me go to was Poison and Warrant. During the Cherry Pie tour and during the Unskinny Bop era.
Who
of
brought you to those?
My buddy Thomas Condon.
Nice.
His
okay.
His parents
okay.
dropped us off.
Oh, okay,
then,
cool.
Yeah, picked so you back up.
I was yeah. I was waiting yep, to see. Yep. It's like, yeah, you're like your parents, like your dad ended up going or something.
No, we're done. I'm not taking any of these. He was willing to pick me up at Thomas's house when it was over, but that's as far as it went. The third show was Aerosmith during their Pump tour and Skid Row.
Mm.
My fourth yeah. concert was supposed to be Van Halen and Alice in Chains opening.
God, that's
and my mom shot
start.
It down because I did something to piss her off.
Oh.
And she was just like, you're not going to the concert. And in probably retrospect, I didn't deserve to. That very rarely did I do dumb things, but when I did dumb things, they were always of the epic variety. Like peeing in a suit of armor in our basement. But yeah, I did not get to go to that show. And
boo.
That would have been my only opportunity to have seen Alice in Chains with Lane. Which,
yeah.
looking back on it, it's just bummer, you know?
Yeah.
Stupid parents. Never rule. Yeah. Did you ever get to see Alice with Lane?
I did not.
Oh. What about you, Rev?
No, never. I probably had a million chances.
Yeah.
Never took it up.
I'll see him next time.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I would go to certain concerts, but I wasn't super into the music scene.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like I knew of Alice in Chains, but I didn't own the albums. All my buddies, own the albums, so we could always listen to them all the time. But it wasn't one that I would sit down and listen to all the time, constantly,
right.
over and over again. So I never really got, you know, tried to go hunt them out, try to see them. And I knew about the bigger concerts from all, you know, from the bigger shows and such. So I'd go to those, but never had the chance. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things that I really kick myself now.
Yep.
Like,
I've seen them with William every time now.
Yeah.
Yep. It's like I'll never miss those guys. They're so damn good live.
I remember, I think it was one of the first ones at the Paramount when he was there, and I was able to see that, and that was fantastic. And then just being up on like the balcony area to be able to look down at that,
yep.
I thought that was super cool. And then it's like, yeah, that whole thing, it's like, now I don't necessarily know what I was missing or what I'm missing by not seeing Lane, but I have
have an idea of what I missed.
I watch a lot of those bootleg videos or even the live facelift. If you ever go online to search live facelift, it's the Moore Theater show that they did. And I learned in that interview, I didn't know this, but it was them, Temple of the Dog, and Mookie Blaylock, Pearl Jam.
Wow.
And
that was
the bill. And it's just like, what? Like, could you imagine?
In a snowstorm in December in 1990.
At the Moore.
Oh, I know that too much. No, I was like, I saw the very first show with William, the free show they did at the Moore. They had a bunch of guests, like Duff McKagan came out and played a second guitar on like Rooster. Chris DeGarmo came out and Queensryche, he played on Dirt. Kim Thiel played It Ain't Like That. I have it burned in my memory. That was at like 06.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
The quote unquote practice show.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I still have that ticket somewhere. And it was, it was a blast to be able to see that and, you know, having them play, you know, with William and carry that forward. You know, it's great to see artists, you know, continuing. Obviously, it's a different. It could never go back to being with Lane, obviously. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome to see them out there and doing it and producing art and giving us fun things for our ears to listen to.
And I feel like even, like, let's just say Lane was still alive, which would be obviously incredible. I don't even think I think people would be complaining they're not like the old Alice, you know, because, I mean, no band is ever going to be the same from when they were young, reckless, making bad decisions, you know, and when they grow up and get more mature, the music is going to change, and I'm sure people would have... Who knows what Alice would have sounded like if Lane was around right now? I wonder, obviously. It's no different than Nirvana. Like, what would they have sounded like if Kurt survived, you know?
Yeah, oh, for sure. And then I just think, you know, like the Led Zeppelin as an example. Yeah. Like, they didn't keep it going, and part of probably why everyone still reveres them so much 100%. Is just because they captured a moment in time and let that be that moment in time. Yeah, the Chains, Nirvana, like had they continued, Jimi Hendrix, had any of those ones continued, it would be a radically different story. There would probably be the ups and the downs. I mean, like, you know, the Aerosmith career, they had a moment in time, then it went away, and then they came back and had another moment in time. I mean,
then went away and they wrote songs for movie soundtracks,
and then had a hot dog.
They had someone else write movie soundtracks for them, and then they just played it.
Solid point, very solid.
You know, let's be fair, but I mean, still, like a great band with a very different story. But you could look back and be like, man, at their 70s stuff, I love it. That the Pump era, I love that. You can drop anything in the middle, like you can be like any of those bands could probably go through, you know, any of that, but capturing that moment in time, wherever it is and whatever point in your career it is an incredibly special moment.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, obviously why we still listen to it. It's why it's on rotation. It's why it's part of the lexicon of what is popular music.
Well, I look at even like one of my all-time favorite bands. I will always do everything in my power to see them live. It's Pearl Jam. I think they're a great example of that. You think about it. And I mean, I'll be honest too. I mean, I really do love Lightning Bolt. I think that album is phenomenal. But I don't put any of their newer stuff on the same level or the same pedestal or even the same amount of times that I'll listen to it than their first four. You know, I mean, I'm listening to, you know, the first record still to this day. I'm listening to Versus a hell of a lot still to this day. Vitalogy and even No Code. Like, those are records that I will listen to at least a few times a year. I don't know the last time I listened to Backspacer. I'm not sure when the last time I listened to the album with the avocado on the cover,
you know, like that. Whatever that one is,
right?
Avocado.
And you know, and I'm sure if I sat down and listened to it, I'd be like, man, I forgot how much I love this record. Mm-hmm. And they're all good, but there's something about those earlier records. And I think, like, if Pearl Jam, let's just say, cut it, stop playing, they'd probably be almost revered even on a higher level because there's that almost that mystery of what would have happened and all that, like Led Zeppelin.
Totally.
But I'm glad that they are still doing it. Don't get me wrong, because I get to see them every 5 years when they come to Seattle. I don't want that to stop, and I do enjoy the stuff that they've put out. I mean, can't deny me the most recent song they put out. That one did not stick with me at first. I'll be the first to admit it. And I'm not even really that. Still to this day, I don't think I would listen to that song. Live, on the other hand, I think it sounds phenomenal. It's got the energy live that makes all the sense in the world, but for some reason, the recording just, it's not my favorite. And it's not that I always worry that when I say something like that, people are going to be like, oh, I think it's bad. It's not that I think it's bad. I'd just rather listen to In My Tree or Hail Hail or WMA, you know what I mean? Yeah, so there you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Let's check out, dig out all those deep track names.
Yeah. All right, let's check out a voicemail while we are doing voicemails, emails, and text messages.
Oh, yeah, we're still doing that, aren't we?
Yeah.
Sorry, didn't know you knew something. What's up, Meg? Stevie, the Packers fan. Sorry about the S-bomb, bro.
Oh, no worries.
You got two simple questions. What was your very first concert, and who is on your concert bucket list? My first concert was Poison, Damn Yankee, the Firehouse in Green Bay, Wisconsin on May 14th, 1993. And one person that's on my bucket list is Ice Cube. That just, he would be, such a cool concert to see. Plus, I'd be wearing one of my favorite band t-shirts that have nothing to do with Ice Cube. So, just curious to see what your guys' answers are. Like I said, sorry about the S-bomb, Rob. What up, Guido? Love you. Bye-bye.
My first rock concert was Aerosmith.
Okay.
For the Pump Tour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. And it was the Tacoma Dome. It was the last show before they went to like Buenos Aires or something. I remember that because Steven Tyler said so. And and it was one of those where it was the first time that my mom's friends took me because they had an extra ticket. And it was like the first time I'd been in a crowd that close. Anything else was like seats.
Nice.
And it was just insane. Anything before that, there was some country concerts that I didn't necessarily care about.
At the fair?
No. These were like Travis Tritt and Marty Stewart.
Oh, okay.
Which was still good. Garth Brooks, I've seen, like, was literally one of my first concerts, if not the first.
I put him on my bucket list.
He's worth seeing.
Yeah. I kicked myself for not seeing one of those 17 shows he did last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and he will just play the crap out of everything. Yep. And but Aerosmith was the first, like, rock concert I was able to attend.
It's funny that you mentioned Aerosmith. I saw Aerosmith and most of those bands I talked about at the Meadowlands in New Jersey, which eventually is no longer around. But it was. Let me turn this on. It's distracting me. Oh, that's a great song.
You're distracted by Young Lust.
I am distracted by Young Lust.
Okay, good.
It's a great song. Great record.
It is a really, really good record.
So it was always funny, though, because it was like every band would say, "What's up, Meadowlands?" Or tonight, we're calling it the Meadowlands.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, my gosh. Okay, Sebastian Bach did that. Brett Michaels said that. Steven Tyler said that. We get it. It's the Meadowlands. So I already said what my first one was, which was the girls era of – no, Dr. Feelgood era of Motley Crue. What about you, JT?
It was a Chili Peppers concert.
Boo. Sorry.
Wow. Don't go to a Lakers game, right?
Yeah. The Toadies opened or something.
Nice.
It was a great concert. It was
where was it?
It was in Denver, actually. So I grew up in a small town in Idaho. I'd seen lots of small concerts. Ones like I remember seeing Los Lobos and Buddy Guy. That was the type of ones that came through where I lived. And my parents, we always went and saw music. And I probably saw Los Lobos like three or four times when I was young.
I only
know
them for La Bamba.
Where I was having, just more fun running around and not really paying attention to the music.
Right.
But the first real rock concert was the Chili Peppers.
And a bucket list for you guys.
Oh, man. See, like... I'm trying
now,
to like.
Are we going to limit this to ones that we could actually see?
Or that's
like
my problem.
Like lifetime. Like I'd say, you could go back in time.
Ooh, I'd say let's keep it to band. Because I mean, yeah, let's keep it to people that are still on tour.
Or
have the potential of going back on tour. You know what I mean? Like we would never thought that GNR would have got back together. But I feel like you could have thrown them in the mix because they were all still alive. But yeah, so you couldn't say like Tom Petty. Even though before that it was on my bucket list.
Yeah. Man. Like, I think maybe for me, it would be GNR. You brought that up. And that's, like, the ones that I know for, like, I would actually love to see them live. Now, I mean, I would really love to see them in the heyday live.
Yeah.
But I still would like to at least put that kind of the notch in the bedpost, so to speak, of being able to see them performing.
They were phenomenal at the Gorge, I have to say. Like,
were they really?
It was insanely great. Yeah, they performed sounded great. Axl's voice sounded great. The band had great energy. I don't think you would walk away disappointed thinking, oh, I'm seeing them in the end of their career kind of vibe.
Yeah, the CenturyLink show was awesome when they came through the very first time. That was, I mean, it was, you know, it was Guns N' Roses. It wasn't like, oh, good job, guys. It was like, this is Guns N' Roses. Like, totally blown away.
I remember that we were at the radio convention.
Oh, God damn it. That's why. Okay, that's
and
why.
I kept getting tweets and messages from people like, you're missing out on the greatest show ever.
And you're like, shut up.
I'm like, I hate you.
Shut up.
Like, can you at least say it's okay?
He's like, it's all right.
Mine would be Bruce Springsteen. I keep...
Interesting.
I keep wanting to see him live, and I keep putting it off.
I would have just imagined, because you're an East Coast guy, New York guy, that you would have...
the boss.
Like, don't you just get that? Like, you're born, and you get one ticket to use at any point in time.
And everybody's born with a Bruce Springsteen ticket.
Yeah, you
I
just
wish.
Get one whenever he comes around, you get to go.
I keep meaning to. He's not, like, my favorite, but I feel like that's a guy you need to see before he calls it quits. He's arguably one of the greatest live performers. It'd be pretty awesome to see him live. What about you, JT?
That's a tough one. Just thinking of all the, you know, the great music, like the Boss, that would be a fun one to see. One that I hope is not too far around the corner would be Tool.
Yeah.
I saw them 2002 here in Seattle, and they went through once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just great show.
I've seen them.
Love that.
I've seen them twice. Once
they
at
never
the
disappoint.
One at the Key Arena, which was cool because it was the first experience, so I didn't realize how they do the setup with Maynard just kind of hiding in the back.
Is that the one where random bodies were coming down from the ceiling?
It might have been.
That was a weird one. I remember.
The only other one I saw was at the Angel of the Winds Arena now, which was used to be the Xfinity Arena up in Everett, and that one was cut short.
Yep.
Because Maynard wasn't feeling great. And so that one was, I'm reluctant to call it a disappointment because their show is still really, really good.
Yep.
Like all of the members of the band are just phenomenal. And so it was still great to watch it. But then, it was cut a little bit short and I was like, man, all right. Yep.
That's why I never really care when people are like, oh, you don't get to see Maynard. I'm like, you don't need to see Maynard. Maynard's voice is all that matters.
He's a presence with that. Yeah.
Right. But it's more interesting to watch their guitarists and their bassist. Like, those two guys. And also Danny Carey on drums, but like it's really mesmerizing to see what those guys. I mean, I'm sure as you as a guitarist would agree. Like it's insane. What the hell are you doing? And how are you doing that?
Yeah, no, their overall package, just how it's displayed and put together. They're not like an active live show, they're interactive. You know, all the displays or
the
lights
visuals.
And the visuals.
Yeah.
And those guys just sitting there making incredible noise and it coming out as this beautiful wall of sound is great. And I guess then the other one I would say would be going to see Aerosmith at their Vegas residency.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, I'd seen them in the 90s, and they are one of my favorite bands. Probably the reason I play guitar, actually. So going to see them, but see them at their Vegas residency, not like the first or the last show, just kind of somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Just seeing like, what's this like as you guys are just, in top form and just clicking through. Obviously, they're going to be having fun in Vegas. You wouldn't sign on for a residency like that.
My wife and I were just talking about Britney Spears, how she's doing a whole other Vegas residency, this one with a more urban hip hop feel, as I saw in the press release.
All right.
But I was like, if I'm an artist that can do that, why not?
Yeah.
Your fans will come to you because everyone wants to go to Vegas. You don't have to travel. The set is already set up. Everything's good to go. You don't have to worry about doing crazy sound checks. You probably just do a quick line check and be like, oh, yeah, things are exactly how they were yesterday because we don't touch anything.
My wife went to that for her bachelorette party. Yep. It was the big gathering. They were the night before. That was what they're going to go do. And it was, like she said, it was absolutely 100% fantastic. She wrote a guitar.
Yep, it was freaking awesome. We went and saw it twice.
Oh, yeah, you saw it.
For my wife's birthday, But I would like to see Kiss's residency when they did it. I was kind of bummed I didn't go to see them or Motley Crue. Like, it'd be fun to see Kiss's Vegas residency show.
Yeah, they're about as Vegas as I could imagine any other band being.
Yeah, and I think I put them on, even though I've seen them a handful of times, I would like to see them on their quote-unquote last tour again. Again.
Which one?
Every tour is their last tour.
Until it's not.
All right, let's check out another. Actually, let's read this email because I thought this was funny. It says, please check out this donkey singing like an opera singer. I think you guys will get a kick out of it. And they sent us a link to the story. And this is, I'm reading the headline. I'm reading the article story verbatim. A donkey was filmed singing something akin to an operatic aria on Sunday, and you'll be blown away by her voice. Seriously. The video of Harriet, the donkey who hails from Ireland, was originally shared by Martin Stanton from Ireland on the roadside Facebook group on Sunday.
It's an Irish donkey.
So apparently this guy's walking up to the donkey, and as soon as you get near the donkey and he sees you, he starts making a sound that sounds like an opera singer. Are you ready for this?
No.
Well, you're going to get it. Fun fact, this is also the hidden track on the new Bruiser Brody record, Everyone's Dead, available in November.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, weird. It's like a squeaky opera singer.
I love that. Really struggling there at the end.
Yeah. Well, I guess the fat lady sang.
He wasn't warmed up exactly. Freaking everything happens. Man, weirdos. All right, let's check out this voicemail. Man, weirdos.
Man, is when I have an itch at the bottom of my foot and I can't even itch it because I always have my shoes on. And sometimes I just want to basically cut a hole in the bottom of my shoe and just cut the itch spot out.
Or take
I
off
hate
your
shoes in general.
Hate shoes in general.
Don't take off your shoe and scratch it, you dummy.
Like, sometimes, I mean, what do you have like high tops on?
You unlace them and then take it off. I know it's a giant pain in the
ass. It's a process. Yeah. There should be like a button you can hit. Like a little thing shoots up and tickles your feet.
See, my problem exactly is with scratching. Like if I got an itch on the bottom of my foot, my feet are super ticklish. Like I will tickle my own feet and it drives me insane. So you have to be really slow and very deliberate even when it's myself scratching my own foot. It's really stupid and I hate it.
Let's check out one more voicemail.
Hot take.
My husband and I were at a concert last weekend, and it just gets me so mad. People who stand up at concerts right in front of you, if we're all standing, that's one thing, or if it's the encore, whatever. But this is, you know, if we're all sitting, we should all be sitting. If we're all standing, we should all be standing. But the one guy, the biggest guy, standing up in front of you with his little cell phone out, waving in the air, I mean, I know it's fine. He's excited, but he's not the show. We paid money for the show. People who stand at concerts should be kicked out of concerts.
Well, first of all, I was just trying to get a good shot from that show that we were at. No.
Oh, I feel bad because I'm taller than like short people. But also at the same point, you're allowed to stand and do whatever the hell you want in your seat, man. I'm sorry.
I think concerts, I mean, unless it's like an opera or something along those lines, for the most part, I just assume everyone's going to stand to enjoy the band.
Yeah.
Right, and I wonder what concert
I know.
And where it was.
Agreed.
You know, like, if you're on the third balcony at the Paramount, you probably shouldn't be standing.
Yeah,
phone call,
Who's there? Like, if you really want that, buy a seat closer up, you know, where you know people are going to be standing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, on some level, it's and what, yeah, what concert and where you are. But it'd be hard to tell just from that voicemail, like, you know, are you in the third row and expecting to sit down? Come on, you're at the wrong concert.
Right. Is it a rock show? Is it a folky, weird, you know, singer-songwriter show? Because a lot of times I do this also at football games. I like to stand while watching the Hawks when I used to go to the games, but if the people behind me aren't standing, I always feel bad. Mm-hmm. So I always gauge it. I watch it. If the row in front of me is standing, I'm standing. If the row in front of me is not standing, I'm like, all right, well, maybe I should figure this out. You know, look around me. And if I don't want to be that one guy that's standing and being the person that someone would leave a voicemail about. But I mean, I had that happen, though, once at the Ben Folds 5 show. And I've shared that before where I was at, I think it was either the Moore or the Paramount. And, you know, there were good seats, but there was obviously, you know, I was maybe like 20 or 30 rows back. And all of a sudden I get tapped on the shoulder. And the person, like the lady a couple of rows behind me is like, hey, could you sit down? I can't see. And I'm looking around. I'm like, everyone else is standing around me. I don't know what to tell you.
And you're like, no?
And I finally said, no. And then she kept bugging me. And I was like, look, lady, I'm at a concert. Leave me alone. But it's like,
stand on your seat, lady. Come on.
Right. Right. Like, I can't help it if you're shorter than me.
Switch seats with your taller boyfriend or husband or whatever the hell you had. I mean, there's different ways to go about it.
Like at GA shows, I try my best to kind of stand right in front of the soundboard. A, mm-hmm. I like standing there because I think, well, if this is what the sound guy is basing the sound on.
Oh.
It's probably the best sounding spot in the whole venue. And also, I know that I'm not standing in the way of anyone. But, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. And then I'm always, like, looking around like, oh, I don't want to be that guy that's, you know, because I'll lean down to see what my wife is seeing. And I'm like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, and that's, like, usually with me, it'll be, like, I'll be standing in front of my wife. So to make sure that, like, I can, like, position myself so I know that she can see in between other people. And then also I can see as well.
Yep.
But then I'm also, like, I'm super stationary if I'm, like, GA. Like, I don't like going anywhere. So people can recognize, hey, there's a tall guy standing right here. Move around the tall, fat guy, and then you'll be able to see the show. Like, I don't move.
Hot take.
I'm making it easier on everybody, man.
Well, cool. I think we're ready to get rocking. Anything else going on in your world? Any shows coming up, JT?
No. Actually, I got a couple weeks off, and then the tribute bands will be back. We're up at Tulalip for Veterans Day weekend, Saturday, November 11th?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
November 10th? Whatever the Saturday is.
Yeah.
Yeah, up there with the Washington Black, Pearl Jam tribute, Wicked Garden,
the Stone Temple Pilots.
The Nevermind, the Nirvana tribute, the
Saturday is the 10th.
Saturday the 10th, yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
And with Tulalip Casino, we raise money for the Wounded Warrior Project. We do it every Veterans Day. Last year, Tulalip matched donations, and I think we were at like over $20,000 raised.
Jeez,
from
man.
The people there, and then the matching donation of Tulalip. So
wow,
yeah,
that's incredible.
You know, great music for a great cause.
Absolutely.
There.
Wow, that's really freaking cool.
Yeah.
If you had to put together a tribute band, obviously you have all the time in the world to do another tribute. Yeah. But if you were going to put together another tribute band, what would the tribute band be for?
Personally?
Yes. Just to satisfy JT's needs.
Just to satisfy. Wow. What would it? Maybe do a cross, because if you can find someone to be able to do both these bands, but do like an Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses.
Yes.
Together, so you can kind of just mix it up and go with
Gunsmith.
It. You know, some history of, you know, like Mama Kin that both bands have done. Both of those, you know,
like
obviously
raw blues and rock tributes.
Yeah, add more guitar, and I will be happy.
Yes, that's funny because my first one, I was like, "What would I want to be?" I was like, "Try GNR, Appetite Only, maybe a couple songs off of the Use Your Illusions." But for the most part, I just want to do like an Appetite era GNR thing. And then the other one, I remember for the longest time, Thrill and I talked about this forever. We just never got off our ass and made it happen. We wanted to do a Mother Love Bone tribute band, and we thought it would have been amazing. This is forever ago, and then now there's Stargazer.
Yep.
And they're phenomenal, and they're doing it way better than we would have done it. So I'm glad that they're out there. So shout out to those guys. If you ever have a chance, I keep meaning to go check them out. I'm hoping I'm going to see them the next time they play, but they're a great tribute band as well. Rev, if you were doing a tribute band.
Typo Negative.
Oh, yes.
100%, man.
I'll play drums on that.
Oh, okay. I'll sing terribly, but that'll be perfect. Fine. And I'll also pose for a Playgirl.
That would be funny.
I'm glad the tribute band.
That's a
the
lot.
Tribute band edition. Here we go.
It's the full tribute. Would you use a prosthetic?
Yes, absolutely.
So again, just you know, rumor has it. It looks like it's going to happen. There will be a Bruiser Brody show happening in December.
Ooh.
I know I was talking with Glenn about it. We'll have more information probably next time Glenn's on to talk.
Early Christmas.
It's a nice little tribute show that's for a good friend of everyone. So that will be happening sometime in December. I mentioned, I put let the cat out of the bag, that January 19th, for people to save the date.
Save the date.
Bruiser Brody's going to be rocking your face off.
Face!
And then we're going to have our record out in November. But if you're a Kickstarter pledger, you should be getting that sometime in the near future. We're putting everything together, like JT said, waiting for the t-shirts and getting to put together all the packages and send them on out. And we thank everybody big time for pledging. And if you do have a chance and you have an extra couple bucks, please pledge money towards Glenn's Kickstarter for his solo record. He is almost there. I think he's about $700 some dollars away from fulfilling the needed amount Otherwise, it doesn't get funded. So yep.
Less than 2 weeks, I think, or
15 days.
15 days, so just a little bit over that. But get to it. The final push. It's real, man.
Let's make it happen. All right, let's get on out of here. JT, thank you for swinging by, man.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me.
This is awesome. And we'll be back next week. Glenn will be here. And I believe next week, it's going to be a lot of fun. I always talk about my buddy Tavis.
Yeah.
Tavis is coming in, and he's bringing in Andy Kimura. The two of them are doing stuff in the martial arts world.
Oh.
Andy is the son of Taki Kimura. And if anybody is a Bruce Lee fanatic, you'll probably know that name because Taki was Bruce Lee's best man. He was also the only person that Bruce said can continue to teach his form of martial arts, the Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah.
So Andy, in turn, is also able to teach it. So there's a lot of stuff going on where you can now finally go somewhere to learn that style of karate.
Cool.
So it's going to be a fun conversation. Tavis is always a blast. He's a great friend, and he did so much for us with the Bruiser Brody stuff, drum teching, and just being a positive force and making sure I got home when I was wasted for many Bruiser Brody shows. So that'll be next week. Until then, as always, stay positive.